We will have the blessing of a second split sermon today by one of our elders who has served now for many, many years, being faithful to God's church and God's people in different locales. He'll be bringing the second message to us today. That's Mr. Al Mishnick, currently working out of Little Rock, Arkansas.
Isn't that something? You got to have somebody walk you out to the podium. I say don't get old, but everybody says, well, that's better than the alternative. And, you know, after you get about so far up there, sometimes you begin to wonder if it really is. Well, anyway, I had a rather interesting week. And right before the Feast of Tabernacles, very, very good friend of mine had terminal cancer. And it was in the last stages, and the feast pressing right on. He died a week ago last Thursday, just before the Feast of Tabernacles. And I was supposed to be getting some notes to give you a split sermon. Well, needless to say, I got tangled up in so many things that I just scratched down a few notes, and you're going to have to go with them, I guess, is about what it amounts to. Most of it will have to come off the top of my head anyway, if there is such a thing yet. As it turned out, he died Thursday about 2 p.m. Sunday night at sundown starts the Feast of Tabernacles, and everybody wanted to go to the Feast of Tabernacles. How the family managed to squeeze all of that in, the funeral service and everything, I wasn't involved in that, and they did a glorious job of it. But what they did was rather interesting. He was buried Saturday because the mortuary couldn't even fit the funeral service, I guess, into this whole schedule. I don't even know all of the details of that. Doesn't matter. But anyway, he was buried about 1 o'clock Saturday. At 2 o'clock, the family got together right at the grave. Since I had told him that if I lived longer than he did, that I would conduct his funeral service, I thought maybe I ought to be there anyway, so I went to meet the family. He was already buried. He was buried at 1 o'clock, and we had a meeting there together at 2, and I said, this is not going to be a service because he's dead. We all knew, and thankfully, at least we know life and death different than all of most people do. And his wife came to me right then, and he said, before he died, he said, if I die before the Feast of Tabernacles, you go to the feast. She's sitting right back here, brethren. She came to the feast. I believe he was a pretty converted Christian. Fantastic man. I just thought I'd tell you that before I get into what I want to talk about. I want to talk about the 23rd Psalm. The Lord is my shepherd, in the King James, the New King James Version says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the path of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. It's a fantastic psalm when you stop to think about it a little bit. I thought I would talk about some of that. And He goes on to say, "You prepared a table before me before my enemies. You anointed my head with oil. My cup runneth over. My cup runneth over." I still use the old King James Version. "My cup runs over," in the New King James, it says. And it says, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." Now, I looked up that opening sentence in the Moffat translation, and I jotted it down right here in my notes, so I have that. I believe it was exactly as he wrote it. Moffat translation says, "The eternal shepherds me. I lack for nothing." I like that better in the sense that the Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. You know, we'll always want something. So if I want nothing else, I certainly want to be in God's kingdom. And I think we should realize that this psalm, I don't know exactly when King David composed that psalm. I don't know exactly what his conditions were at the time. Certainly he must have been a very, very converted man by this time. The Apostle Paul told us in, better not just quote it, I better turn to it, Acts 13 and verse 22, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly. Acts 13 and verse 22 says, "And when he had removed him," that's when Saul, the King Saul, had been removed from as the kings of Israel, "he raised up for them David as king, to whom also he gave testimony and said, I have found David, the son of Jesse, a man after my own heart, who will do all my will." What an awesome thing to say about anyone. I thought if any of us can have that said about us, we'll be ready for God's kingdom, as we have been hearing in so many real good sermons this Feast of Tabernacles. I think I was really pleased with the feast sermons that we've been hearing, and for very good reason, I hope, because I want to look at this thing just a wee bit different. I was born in 1921. When I was about 5 or 6 years old, I could walk 2 3/4 miles to school, to a little old country school out there, and nobody ever worried about any child ever being molested along the way or anything like that. The world was so different, you can't believe it. And I saw this world develop into where we are today. And where are we today? I want to think about that just a little bit. We live in a day today that many of you young people all grew up in, and so you grew right with it. This is the way it ought to be, to carry right on and on and on and on. Is it? Now, we know better. We've heard many sermons about what's going to come in the future, and the not too distant future in all probability, because the signs are here with us now. When the disciples asked Jesus what would be the sign of his coming in the end of the age, the things we see happening are some of those signs, I honestly believe. You know, it's interesting. I look out at the audience and all I see is black. I can't see you folks out there. I wish I could, in a way. You know, it's nice to see the audience in a way, but I look at you even if I don't see all of you. But it is dark up here when you look out at the audience. Now, King David spoke the 23rd Psalm. "The Lord is my shepherd." Oh, how I wish I could say that, not just as something that I'm standing here telling you, but living it. Always thinking of it, always, as God is our shepherd. And never let that get away from us. And he says, I shall not want. That's, as I read that out of Moffat, where he said, I have need of, or I lack nothing if God is my shepherd. If he is my shepherd always and forever, I should look and see what I did write for notes here, I guess. Oh, I said in Matthew 24 and verse 3 was where the disciples asked Jesus, what would be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? And he did tell them. Now, we've been over that so many times, I'm not going to cover that. But what are our conditions that we're living in today? Let me ask this away. Has there ever, ever been a society that has the technology that we have? I stand here before a microphone, and we have technology the likes of which I am quite convinced no society has ever seen the likes of. And we've sort of grown up with it now lately. And it's all sort of natural. Everybody has cell phones. There are lots of them out there. We have computers in homes. We have all of these things. When I went to school, to the little old country school, there were 8 grades all in one schoolroom. And let me tell you something. I saw a test that was given, I believe it was 1896, to the 8th grade students. I'll tell you that any of you would have difficulty with that test. Absolutely fantastic things they taught us at that time. Today, I find that people, a lot of the children, don't even know how to write script. You have to teach them how to sign their names. Now, altogether different, but is it any better? Boy, I tell you what, it's nice to be in a nice air-conditioned room. I believe it was 1934. I was a teenager. We had a hot summer up in southeastern Nebraska. I think it was over a month. I believe it was about 6 weeks, but it was over. I'm almost positive it was over a month. That the temperature never at any time ever got below 90, day or night. Daytime, it got up to 120 some days. People weren't dying of heat. We lived through it. Now, people die all the way along, of course, and so there's some died there. Possibly could have blamed the heat for it, maybe some of them, but really not so. We just lived through it. Air conditioning was a word we didn't even know. There was no such thing as air conditioning. We have the comfort of air conditioning. We have the comfort of transportation today that you could transfer, you go anywhere around the world in a matter of hours in a sense of the word. We all know that. It's awesome. In the wintertime, you could get fresh vegetables flown in from South America the next day or two. Fresh, right there, right in the store. Awesome, the age we live in and the things that we have available to us, all of which just came along and we sort of take them for granted as they go. Wasn't that way when I was a child, I'll assure you. I went to the store one day and I told the clerk, I said, when I was young, a teenager, I walked into the little old grocery store there at home and I picked up a couple of items and went over to the grocer and I said, here's what I've got, just put it on my bill and I'll pay it. He said, you didn't do that, did you? I said, well, I sure did. And we paid it. People were honest. There was honesty of the likes that you never see anymore. We had one guy that was he'd pay his bills, but he was always a little slack. So he sold a wheat crop one time, and he had a pretty good-sized check. And he thought he was going to rib the grocer a little bit, so he came in with this pretty good-sized check, and he told the grocer, he says, well, if you can cash this check, I'll pay my bill. Did the grocer fool him? He took that check right out of his hand, and he wrote him a counter check for the difference of his bill, and he got his bill paid. right then and there. And that's about the way it was. You see, everybody knew that man in that part of the country. That's the way it was. Everybody knew everybody. And there was honesty all the way up and down the ridge. You can't trust anyone today. I heard here a while back, while I was listening to television, a judge was speaking. And I almost fell through the floor. I couldn't believe what I was hearing. That judge said that we've reached the place where they expect the witnesses to lie. I said, I can't believe that. You raise your right hand and you put your hand on the Bible and swear that you'll tell the truth, and they expect you to lie? What kind of a society is this? Well, it's altogether different than it was when we were young. Now, I saw all of this happen. Now, the reason I'm mentioning this, what about the time that's coming? We just heard it over and over and over and over during this Feast of Tabernacles. Matthew 24 and verses 21 and 22. I better turn to them. Matthew 24, verse 21 and 22, where it says, then there will be great tribulation, such as not been since the beginning of the world unto this time, nor ever shall be, the worst in all of mankind. On top of transportation facilities as never been before in the world, in time when technology has reached a stage that has never been before, I'm almost positive of that. Now, the one verse I'd have to question a bit would be Matthew 24 and verse 37. Here I am. I better turn to it. Matthew 24 and verse 37 says, as the days of Noah were, so shall the coming of the Son of Man be. But I doubt that they had the transportation facilities that we have or some of the luxurious things that we have. They had the immorality that we have and worse, but so it went. Now, you see, what it will be the time of Christ coming? That's what the disciples asked him. What did he tell them? It's not for you to know. It's not for you to know that. So we have people out here all the time calculating when Christ is going to return. Every time I hear somebody doing that, I almost laugh in their face. Because they don't believe Christ when he said they don't know? It's crazy. You don't believe the Bible, do they? Right here, verse 36, I believe it is. You know, Matthew 24 and verse 36 says, for of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven. But he says, but my Father only. If it was only the Father, then it wasn't he himself, Jesus Christ. He said, was he saying he didn't know? Sure did. Now, I've thought about that a lot, and when I hear people trying to figure out when Christ's going to return, I have to laugh at that. Now, I've thought about that in peculiar sort of ways, maybe. When is the Father going to do that? Oh, everybody wants to figure that out. I don't. You see, I think that the Father is, well, now I don't know whether this, I shouldn't say it that way. I said, could it be, I'll ask it that way, could it be that the Father is watching the conditions of mankind trailing on up to the place where if somebody didn't intervene, they'd annihilate all life? Isn't that what verse 22 said right here in Matthew 24? Let me read it again. Matthew 24, 22. And unless those days should be shortened, no flesh would be saved. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Who's going to shorten them? Jesus said, the Father only. Is he just watching things to go until man would annihilate himself? And then say, okay, now, son, stop it. And send Jesus to be the new king, and it would all be forming right there. Of course, we got to watch the signs ourselves to see when these things develop, and we've been told that so many good sermons that I'm not going to touch on that. I just mentioned this because, now, I didn't say this is the way it's going to happen. I just said, at least I'm not trying to figure out when it's going to happen, that's for sure, because I think that's all foolishness. Well, we have technology today of the likes of we've never had. We have transportation the likes of probably no time on the face of the earth has ever been available. I believe we can truly say that. Now, we have air-conditioned homes, comfortable homes. I enjoyed the air conditioning this summer, I'll assure you. It got up to 108 one day in Little Rock this summer. Sure, it was nice to have an air-conditioned home to be in. Not like it was in 1934 when it got up to 120 in the daytime. And we went out and did our regular work, things that we had to do out on the farm, right out in that heat. And people weren't dropping dead. But it was sure nice to have the comfort now of air conditioning that we have. We have these fantastic things that are available to us. And how about what King David said? Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. Or as Moffat put it, if I have no lacks, not lack anything, if God is my shepherd, if the Eternal is my shepherd. Now, what did he say? Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. What does that sound like? I don't know if it could be the tribulation or not, as he's describing it, but sure sounds like it could be. But what did he go on to say? I fear no evil. Oh, I wish I could say that always and never let anything bother me or to cause me to be fearful ever. If King David reached that point, I fear no evil. Why? For you are with me always. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And he said, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. But he says, I fear no evil. Absolutely awesome, brethren. Have we developed to that point? Or are we listening to all of these various things that we have available, crowding us in from Satan the devil, who is the god of this world? That is, he's the ruler of this world that we're living in. I've said so often that I hear people get up and pray, and I gave a sermon on this one day down there. And I said, we look at God sort of as an old ogre out here that wants you to keep his law, boy, or he'll slam you. God isn't like that, is he? When Jesus faced the worst trial, and I don't have this in my notes, so I'll turn to it anyway. When he faced the worst trial that any man has ever faced, I think I could say that truly. What did he say to the Father? Luke, I'm going to turn to it and read it. The 14th chapter, if my memory serves me right, and I believe it does sometimes anyway. He told his disciples to stay out here and stay awake, you know, or stay alert, that he was going off and pray. And when he did, he prayed to the Father. But in verse 34, then he said to them, my soul is extremely sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch. So he went a little farther and fell to the ground and prayed as if it were possible the hour might pass from him. He prayed that they wouldn't have to go through that. And yet he said, Abba, Father. I've often thought of that. What is that, Abba, Father? Well, I took Vine's expository dictionary, and I looked up that word, Abba. It happens to be a Aramaic word, it says, and I don't have the, I wish I had it right out of Vine's. I didn't copy it out. But he said that that Abba is comparable to a little child running up to a loved parent and addressing them as my daddy or my mama, you know, very affectionately. That's what that Abba was. And it says, Abba, Father. That touched me. Why don't we address God like that? He is our Father. When we are begotten of His Holy Spirit. Now, we're not born yet. We all know that. We know the verses and so forth. 1 John 3, first couple of verses tells us we're children of God, but we aren't born yet. And it doesn't tell us what we're going to be, because it'll be so great that we can't even imagine it. Is that worth going through the worst tribulation that has ever come upon mankind? It's ahead of us. How about the world out here? Do they know that? They're living in it, and it goes on. It's got to keep going, got to keep going, or at least like it does, developing more and more. Not so. The worst time that has ever hit mankind is coming. And maybe sooner than we think sometimes. But, of course, we don't know, because he didn't tell us exactly. But he did tell us to watch. And as I said, it sort of enters my mind that maybe that's what the Father's doing, just watching it until mankind just gets down so demoralized that he'll finally kill himself totally and completely. Can I say, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. I have no needs. And can I say, yea, though I walk through that valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil. Fear no evil? I didn't turn to it, and I'm not going to necessarily, but you can read Psalm 91. Where it says 1,000 will fall at your right hand and 10,000 at your side, but it'll not come near you. If God is my shepherd, if the Eternal really is my shepherd, is He able to protect me in whatever situation may arise? If I could only get that closeness to God. And that's what it's all about. That really is what our Feast of Tabernacles here sort of depicted for all of us anyway. And I am so pleased to hear those sermons that brought all of this out, because I thought that was so beautiful. We have to grow to where we'll fully and completely trust God. And yet in this society with all of these things, and all of the actually luxurious things, in a sense, if we stay out of the crime, which we try to do, of course. And all of those luxurious things that we have, that Satan is crowded as on us just to carry on. And then comes a tribulation like has never been before. I have heard of people that were filling their houses with food because they wanted to have enough food to go through the 3.5 years of tribulation. What stupidity. Excuse me for saying it that way. I believe it is. If you had even a cache of food that would last a significant amount of time, just as if the world around you was starving to death, what would happen? Why, they'd kill you so fast you wouldn't know what happened. Just to get a bite of food. We're not kidding anybody. We're either going to trust God or we won't. He sets a table before me in the presence of my enemies, David said in that little psalm. Now, I had to memorize that little psalm when I was probably back in the 1920s when I was a nice little Sunday school boy, you know, going to Sunday school. And all it meant to me in that time was just so many harsh words I had to memorize and didn't mean a thing. I got thinking about that psalm. And there's a little more in there than what we commonly think of when just reciting it off. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, that could be a time of death stalking us right at hand. Sounds to me like it could be tribulation. Now, he says, I'll not fear. I'll fear no evil. What a saying. Why? For you're with me. If God is with you, he can protect you in any situation. And I don't doubt that in one iota. The problem is for me to stay close to God. And that's what I want to do. I want to have my thinking so that when anything arises, I think first about what does God think of all of this? How would Jesus Christ react when he was walked this earth himself? That's the example I'd like to follow. And I lack a long ways of following that one, I'm sorry to say. But I'm getting a little closer every day. I recall when I was first baptized, I'd been in the Army for 3.5 years, and I'm sorry to admit that, but I had the Army language, and it wasn't very good, I'll assure you. So I was out one day, and I had an old lug wrench on my car, and I was trying to take a nut off of the wheel to change that wheel, and it slipped, and bang, I hit my fingers up. I cursed the air blue. That was my language then. I sat down and cried. All my children said, "No, Dad, you wouldn't cry. You don't cry anything." But I did. I was so unhappy about that. Here, I'm supposed to be baptized and changed, and I curse like that. I was so ashamed I couldn't help it. You know, I don't do that anymore. Now, I've made a little progress in all of that time. But that's why we are alive and living and suffering the things that we suffer now, in order to make the necessary steps to become more like Jesus Christ would react in everything that he did. And oh, wouldn't it be nice if we could say that the Lord is my shepherd, and by that I have no more needs of any kind. Yes, he leads me in the path of righteousness. He leads me in, don't let me forget it now. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. That's the passage I wanted to get. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. You know what that sounds like? To me, it kind of sounds like the Garden of Eden. Or that kind of a place that God has prepared, whatever it may be. And King David related all of these things in that one little psalm. Well, I wanted to talk about that little psalm. What else have I got here in the word way of notes? I should have some more, probably. I don't need them. I could tell you about, I have enough time to do that. See, the seventh trumpet sounds. What's going to happen? I gave a sermon on this in Revelation 11 and verse 15. We heard the scripture quoted over and over several times already. Revelation 11, verse 15, when the seventh angel sounds, and there were loud voices in heaven saying, the kingdoms of this world have become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. Now, I'm not going to read all those verses, but look down at verse 18. The nations were angry. Your wrath has come. The seven last plagues of God. When are the seven last plagues of God ushered in? That's the seventh trump. Now, we've been taught that, and we have the booklets on it and all. Who is going to be resurrected? The first fruits of God are going to be resurrected. The very first real addition to the God family. Will the Father be really pleased and delighted about that? I sure was when my children were born. But if the first resurrection is when Christ returns at the seventh trump and the seven last plagues are ushered in, well, then they should help administer them to with Jesus Christ rather than to face them. It's rather interesting. Now, he said a little more here, one thing I wanted to mention. The nations were angry, and your wrath has come, and the time of whom? The time of the dead, that they should be judged. How do you judge dead? You can't judge dead people. What's that talking about, anyhow? Well, let's go back to Ephesians, the second chapter. As I said, I don't have any of this in my notes. I just want to turn to it anyway. Ephesians, the second chapter. And see what the Apostle Paul said about that very subject. In Ephesians chapter 2 and verse 1, it says, and you, you he has made alive who were dead. How? In trespasses and sins, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, and according to the prince of the power of the air that is ruling it all. That old ogre out here, when we called on God, well, that's about the only God we ever knew, and shame on us. We never saw the real God, that God is love, brethren, and a loving Father, not that old ogre out there. And let's see, where did I want to go down? I'll read verse 4. But God, who is rich in mercy because of his great love with which he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses. Yes, until God called me out of this world. I couldn't understand any of this. I could read them. That wouldn't make sense to me, judging the dead. Foolishness. No, they were dead in sin until God opened their eyes to the truth. And only then can they wake up and be alive. And so, Jesus Christ came that we might have life. We couldn't have it without the awesome sacrifice that he paid, which is a marvelous sacrifice, and he did pay it in our stead. I wanted to point that out because I think it's worth us seeing the reality of these things in the face of what we're sure to see ahead if we live that long. I thought maybe I'm happy that I'm 91 years old and probably won't live to see all this great tribulation. But if it comes before I die, I'll see some of it. Whatever. I think many of you will see it. Are you ready? We've heard that asked in sermons all through here, and very good ones, I think. I wanted to just close with that and tell you that I think that our urgency to be prepared needs to go with us after this feast and to really exemplify the kind of life that Jesus Christ lived, so that we too can say with David, "The Lord is my shepherd." But he said, "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow." He ended the psalm with that. "Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the day of my life. And I will then dwell in the house of the Eternal forever."